Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode of Lockdown Cavaliers. As always, I'm Chris Manning from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. Today, I have a fun show. No game today. It's a light weekend Cavs game, so we get to finally cut a bit loose and do something fun. As a result, I'm joined today by Carter Rodriguez, a writer at Fear the Sword. He also works for 120 Sports to talk about Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving and their expanded roles in the Cavs' offense. We went into some of the changes we're seeing. You know, which of Love and Kyrie's different roles, which one is more pronounced, which one is more meaningful, and if the Cavs can keep it up. So please, I think you'll enjoy the show. Just please give it a listen, and I hope you enjoy. As always, please give us that 5-star rating and review on iTunes if you're a fan, and enjoy today's show.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey Cutter, how's it going?
Hey man, doing good. Just enjoying the most drama-free Cavs season of all time.
Are you surviving Chicago post the Cubs World Series win, though? That's the real question.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not as much of an Indians diehard as probably some of our listeners and, you know, people on Indians Twitter and whatnot. So I'm handling it fine. The city is insane. I just actually walked to Wrigley Field today. Today's a Sunday. We're recording on Sunday. 4 or 5 days after they won, and people are just swarming there in mass, like in pilgrimages. Like there's people selling bottled water outside of the stadium. Everyone's writing on the exterior of Wrigley in chalk, like writing thank you notes. Just from a sports fan perspective, it was a really kind of a special environment. The city's going crazy. I'm probably handling it better than fellow Chicagoan, Daniel Rowell, who is
he is not
having fun with the Cubs, but I'm just distant enough, and I'm still just so satisfied from the Cavs title that I can appreciate it a little bit more, I think, than most, which is nice.
Yeah, and I before we get into what we're gonna talk about, I certainly think that the city of Chicago, like they've had the titles recently, but the Cubs kind of just means so much to that city that I think it's just really cool that they get to experience this. I've read a bunch of people talking about it. I've read, heard people on podcasts, like Robert Mays from The Ringer was on their baseball, but he's an NFL writer, and you could just hear the joy in his voice, like 2 days after it happened, and how like tired he was, and like for sports fans, that's just like what you want, and if more people can experience that, that's fine. And like,
yeah, it's funny. Cool. I'm almost like making other my friends and coworkers who are Cubs diehards. I'm almost like making it about me because I'm just like asking them all these questions. Like, because I remember so vividly from June 19th, like how cool that moment was, and like all the ranges of emotions you go through when you win a title, especially in a absolute incredibly dramatic game 7. So, it's just like, oh, what did you feel like when you did this? And it's like, because it's like they're feeling all the same things I got to feel just a couple of months ago. So it's really cool to see your friends. I mean, obviously no one wants to hear about how happy I am for Cubs fans on this pod probably. But
yeah, whatever.
At the same time, it does feel really it's nice to get to talk to my friends. Because it almost helps me relive how cool June 19th was.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I've talked to a couple of people that I know and that live in Chicago or Cubs fans, and it's just cool. And like just reading all the stuff, it's similar in a lot of ways to the Cavs. And I mean, even the parade videos were just crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts.
Plus,
Chicago Public Schools had the day off.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome.
Swarms of drunk high schoolers descended upon the city of Chicago.
That's great. High school kids, what a time to be alive. Anyway, so today we are going to talk about Kyrie and Kevin Love specifically, but some of the differences in the Cavs' offense is sort of the broader change. And that's, I think, Carter, fair to say that it's because of Kyrie and Kevin Love. If you're watching the games and you're not looking at Basketball Reference or NBA stats, and you're watching the game, it should be pretty clear that both of these guys are doing more in the offense this year. Kyrie is definitely taking on a bigger role in terms of initiating, in terms of handling the scoring load. Kevin Love is touching the ball more. He's getting post-ups. One of the things that I think has been interesting is that he's driving from the wing a lot. He's not just a catch-and-shoot player this year. Now, these are changes that I think make a lot of sense. I think they've been productive for the Cavs offense. And, I mean, if you look at how they're performing, as we record this, they're first in the league in offensive rating by 0.5 over the Boston Celtics at 111.9. That's very good. They're undefeated as we record this as well. And I think just generally speaking, they seem to me, they're playing better off because of some of these changes we're seeing.
Yeah, I just think it's a lot easier, you know? When you have to depend on LeBron James for, like, an insane amount of creation, a guy that we kind of know will not go all out for every game, it kind of leads to some up and down efforts, right? Yeah. Whereas, like, he's smart. He knows how to rest himself. And it seems like he's really figuring out how to take certain moments off and focus more on getting Kyrie and Love buckets. Love's usage rate is up about 3%, I believe. 4%,
yeah,
sorry.
So it's 4%. Where it is at right now, it would be the highest usage rate he's had in Cleveland by 4.2% per Basketball Reference. It'd be his highest in Cleveland by a wide margin, and his highest since he was 24 years old in the 2012-13 season with the Wolves. Technically only played 18 games that season, but if you go back to compare to 2013-14 before he came over to the Cavs, his best year, and statistically his best year, probably his best year, he was 25, had a usage rate of 28.8, which he also had in 2011-12.
Yeah, and one thing that I think is worthwhile is that he's really getting to the line right now in the first six games. He's averaging 7.3 free throws a game. He averaged 4.3 and 4.1 his first 2 years in Cleveland, which is funny enough, his field goal percentage isn't particularly different. His three-point percentage is actually a little bit lower, but he's just scoring a ton more because he's getting the line. And he's hitting 89% of his free throws through six games. One thing I did notice about Love, and I don't know if this is really, thematic of any, or, you know, emblematic of anything, but only 0.8 assists. So he's really kind of been a black hole. I always figured that when Kevin Love started to get optimized in the offense, it would be using some more of his playmaking skills. That 13-14 season, he averaged 4.5 assists. And it seems like they're really going out of their way to turn him into a scorer right now, which, I mean, it's obviously working really well.
Yeah. I think that's a very good point, because they're not going to him to be a hub or a creator. LeBron is still doing that because he's
better at it.
Well, A, he's better at it, and B, he's currently averaging 10.7 assists per Basketball Reference, which would be a career high by a wide margin. His best number before that, he was 25 in 2009-2010, averaged 8.6. LeBron is distributing even more than he ever has. I think it's a really good point. They're going to love to score. They're going to love to just get buckets. I think that's why you're seeing him feeling comfortable driving, by him getting to the line and getting fouled, by him getting more post-ups, and really just being, when he gets the ball, he's either going to shoot it or he's going to pass it back to someone to initiate a new set. And I think that's a really positive sign for the Cavs offense. I think you're seeing them play at a high level. You're seeing LeBron have to do less. And again, this is a six-game sample, so this is very close to the definition of hashtag small sample size.
Yeah.
But this is clearly a plan. This is clearly not something that's just been a one- or two-game thing. You're seeing LeBron, let's say against the Sixers, he's going to take over late if it's a close game and they need someone to lean on, especially if Kyrie's not playing well. Because they lean on Kyrie against the Rockets. But you're seeing them consistently run these same sort of sets, giving these same sort of opportunities. And one reason I think for that is you're seeing Kevin Love is playing with bench units. Kevin Love, the bench units haven't solidified themselves around him yet. You look at the lineups.
Oh, also, Iman Shumpert is playing point guard in those units.
And we're going to get to that because I think this actually relates to that down the line. But
sorry.
No, you're okay. No, you're okay. That's a very good point. But besides Iman Shumpert is the backup point guard because you've literally seen Kay Felder for 10 minutes or something.
A net rating of 105, by the way.
Killing it.
3K. Free Kay Felder.
Fun thing about Kay Felder before we, as a tangent and this black hole of Kay Felder. I posted a short form on our Facebook page at Fear the Sorted about his first bucket. It got like 30 shares within an hour, and I don't know why.
Just people love Kay, man.
Yeah.
Anyone who's like the unknown is always going to be really fascinating. That's why, like, if we write a trade column with trade ideas, it's going to get, you know, 700% the traffic of everything else. Yeah, just like, this is a new thing. And that's why I write trade columns, because I'm an egomaniac. And I just want measurables.
You're deplorable, Carter. You're just a nasty, nasty.
I am.
You're just nasty.
I'm a nasty woman. All right. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
Sorry.
But you look at Kevin Love. I mean, you look at how we're seeing what the lineups are seeing. You look at his most common lineup, most used lineup is the three in terms of a three man lineup is LeBron and J.R. Smith. If that makes sense. But if you look at how the Cavs are using five-man lineups through six games, there's only one lineup that has over 10 minutes played together, and that's the starters. Like it's early, but you look at every game, you're not seeing the same guys kind of running out together, and I think that's kind of important to note. I think Love just as a rule of thumb, being on the bench unit gives him an opportunity to do the stuff he's really good at as an offensive player besides spotting up. Because, I mean, if you look at the numbers statistically for his career, he's not exactly a dead-eyes off-ball three-point shooter. He is good, and he's effective, and he creates space. But it's not like he's hitting 40% of those shots. He's a pretty decent three-point shooter who's never going to be, a Korver or someone like that is this elite off-ball shooter.
Yeah, and he's always, and in his defense, he has elite gravity. Guys don't want to leave him for whatever reason. Hopefully no other teams are listening to this podcast because like guys typically stick to him, and he does really help open up the offense with his threat of shooting, even if his shooting is never going to be elite. But yeah, it's good to see him, and when I remember when they traded for Channing Frye, one of the things I was most excited about was Kevin Love is going to actually get to play in the post for the first time without a center next to him that can't shoot.
Yes.
Because it's really hard to carve out space on the block and really, take your time with a post up when you've got Tristan Thompson's man just waiting for you to take your step into the lane.
Yeah. No, you're 100% correct on that.
And he's kind of getting that chance because they really haven't played Birdman at all. It's been pretty strict nine-man units, and Channing Frye is the backup center on this team. And sometimes they've even played Love at center, and I think that really helps him have more room to operate. But even beyond the style, the usage and the lineups they're running, he's just playing really confident. Like
he is.
He took like a little step back jumper the other day, it was one of the most confident moves I've seen him make as a Cavalier. It wasn't like, oh man, better make this because they don't go to me much. So if I miss, they're just gonna stop giving me the ball, because that's pretty much how they've been.
Yeah.
Like I had a joke. I have friends who play daily fantasy and stuff. They asked about Kevin Love, whether they should play him against the Knicks. And I was like, yeah, they're gonna go to him a lot because they like to give him a lot of touches early in the year before they realize they don't care about him.
That's cruel, but
But it seems like they kind of care about him
this time.
Like,
I think
I remember you talking to me last year about when you were looking at some of his touches, they were really inorganic.
Lots of pesticides, just like, not like cared for properly in the fields. Like,
no,
just really taking bad care of.
Yeah. Not like the really shoehorning them in. And they seem to actually be building his offensive shooting possessions into the offense this year in a way I don't think they were last year.
Yeah, and I actually kind of think to a lesser degree it's the same thing for Kyrie. With Kyrie, he's doing a lot of the same stuff we've seen him do. But I think the numbers don't exactly tell you this. I mean, you look at last year, his usage rate is only 0.4 above what it was last year in the 53 games he played during the regular season. And in the playoffs last year, his usage was above 30, so it was even higher in the playoffs, which, you know, obviously was where he had his best moments. But in terms of a regular season usage, this is his highest since he was a 20-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
I could see him surpassing the usage he had when he was 20 in 2012-13. His true shooting percentage is getting a little bit closer back to where it was during 2014-15. It's at 54% right now, which is okay. It would be a little high if we did miss two technical free throws in back-to-back games, which is just really
bizarre. And if he didn't go 3-for-16 yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's the thing about, you know, hashtag small sample size, is that one horrendous outlier game, like that Sixers game was, just completely tanks your stats.
Yeah, and then you also have the other end of the spectrum where against the Rockets, he was just fantastic. He was the best player on the floor that night, besides Harden, who was just putting up these absurd numbers. But Kyrie's getting to do more. You know, his assists are a little bit down. Like, he's averaging what would be the lowest assist total of his career at four. Like, an even four a game right now. It's 0.7 lower than last year. You know, a full 2.1 lower than what he had when he was 21 in his first All-Star, or in his second All-Star season. I think it was the second All-Star season. But he's scoring 23 points a game. And just generally speaking, he's kind of just taking on some of the scoring duties from LeBron. I mean, he's averaging slightly more points than LeBron. Actually, Kyrie, Love, and LeBron are all above 20 points a game, which is
crazy.
It's crazy. I wonder how sustainable it is, but it's kind of funny because if you would have, when we were reading previews, we were talking about this ourselves. I don't think anyone, particularly with Love, expected that to happen. Like, I don't think this is kind of what we expected.
Yeah, and I, you know, it's funny because I actually, like, hate this discussion because I think it's normally one we try to shoehorn in every year. Like, this could be the year that LeBron starts to cede some of the offensive responsibilities to Kyrie. And, like, and it never happens, and he never does because he's still better than Kyrie, you know? Like, and, like, I always just kind of thought it was, like, this thing that kind of spawns from people not fully understanding how good of a scorer LeBron is, because he's not like a perfect jump shooter that people like try to, you know, it's like the whole, like, who's the better pure scorer, Carmelo Anthony or LeBron James? And dumb people always say Melo because he makes fadeaways better, I guess, or something. So, like, I think it's like springs from that, but like this year he really is like actively like looking to get these guys their shots. But what I think the most noteworthy thing about Kyrie's season so far has been that 3-point volume.
Yes.
He's taking 7 a game.
I'm okay with that.
And he's never taken more than 5 his whole career. 2 extra threes a game is not insignificant. And I honestly think it is endemic of he's meaning to do this. This is planned.
Yeah.
Is that he's going to start taking more threes, because for someone who's as good of a 3-point shooter as Kyrie is, especially off the bounce, he passes up so many shots that I can't tell you how many times I'm just like, pull, go ahead, man. You're so good at this.
Yeah.
You know, obviously last year he was working his way back from an injury, so that's kind of a, you know, kind of a throwaway. But this guy's a 40% 3-point shooter. Right now he's at 44%, even with the nightmare game in Philly. And at 7 attempts a game, that is just devastatingly efficient. And once he started, you know, when he's finishing around the rim the way he can, God, this guy's just going to be – the thing that I think is interesting about Kyrie is I think even though he's young, even though he's only 24, I think sometimes people think he doesn't have as much development left in him, because he's not like an unpolished athlete like Andrew Wiggins, you know, where like Wiggins, you can say, okay, here are easily apparent skills that he could develop, and that's how he will get better as he gets older. But a big part of getting better as you get older is learning what game parts of your game to grow that are a little quieter, or, you know, little IQ things. And Kyrie, who doesn't need to get any better at three-point shooting, but just needs to take more. That's part of the growth of getting older and figuring out what you do well on the basketball court.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
Yeah, and this is something we've talked about in G-Chat, is that I'm of the opinion that I think Kyrie really, his next, the logical evolution for me is that he would kind of become like a Harden type-ish player. I don't really love him taking a lot of mid-range shots.
I mean, no one loves that.
And like, but it's like, Lou has talked about this after games, and he's kind of talked about that. He likes getting to those spots. And I sort of get it because he can get that shot off because his dribbling allows him to get those shots off. And he's I think for the last look at the numbers, he's shooting very well there. But I think it kind of makes him a little bit inefficient. I think he could get fouled and take advantage of his very, very good free throw shooting if he went to the rim more. He's definitely a good enough 3-point shooter to play that way. And I think you look at him right now, you know, he's averaging 23 points a game, and he's shooting really well from three, but he's shooting only 43.6% from the field. He's only shooting 43.4% on 2-point shots. He's going to probably get that closer up to, like, let's say 48% over time. Like, he's probably going to get better. And you look at Kevin Love, it's kind of an interesting thing there, too. He's only shooting 42.6% from the field. I kind of expect Kevin Love to get better, too. You kind of expect Kevin Love to get closer to, let's say, 45% overall for the year, something like that. Like, I think those are pretty realistic jumps for them. And at the same time, like, LeBron's shooting 48.5% from the field, and he's that's with him shooting 25.9% from three and settling for just some garbage long twos and some kind of dumb threes, like at least twice or three times a game. Like, this Cavs offense is right now, as we record this, has the best offensive rating. I think it should get better, and I think if they play this way, I think it logically just should get better.
Yeah, I mean, so if you're looking for regression to the mean on both ends, I mean, Channing Frye is shooting 53% from three.
Iman Shumpert is shooting 54%. Yeah.
So, I mean, those will probably go down a little bit, but not, I mean, Channing, probably not a ton. He takes all his threes right at the top of the arc, and you know what he shoots at the top of the arc threes? About 50%. He's filthy up there.
His release is so fast.
And it's so high, and it's just, and like, that's what the Cavs offense has needed for a couple of years, is a guy who can just stroke from the top of the three-point arc, and that's his best shot. So he's going to get loads of those. And then, you know, you see Dunleavy about 38. So that seems about fair. JR's only at 36.
Well, I actually think Dunleavy probably gets a little bit better, just because I think he's a guy who's going to get all these clean open looks. And when I've watched him play the first six games, I don't necessarily think he's comfortable in his spots yet. Like, I don't think he has hit. He feels like he exactly knows where he's going to be. He's still getting used to playing with these guys. I mean, think about this. Mike Dunleavy went from playing with Derrick Rose, Tony Snell, and Jimmy Butler in a messed up Hoiberg offense and also under Tibbs, to playing with LeBron, who is literally the best distributor in the NBA. Like, he literally, it's just these big changes for him. I mean, no one in Chicago, like, yes, there are other people that could throw like this type of pass, but that pass that he when LeBron roped it around with his defenders again,
put English on it, and
like, when Dunleavy was there, there's literally no one that he was playing with that could have thrown that pass before that. Like, he's playing
probably the only one in the world per LeBron.
Yeah, per LeBron, and a lot of people in my Twitter mentions still, like a week later, have still been like, Boris Diaw and Manu could do that. Like, literally, it hasn't stopped. It's been kind of annoying.
Price of going viral, Chris. Price of going viral.
I went like quasi viral. I got like 50 retweets on that. It wasn't even like I got like the 200, like, not anything. But I mean, I think like J.R. Smith is going to get better because he has talked about how he's playing back into shape. And I think you're right, Shumpert. There's no way in the world Iman Shumpert is going to be shooting 54% from three in a month. Like, I'm waiting for like the stretch where he misses his next 15. But like, Channing Frye is going to stay pretty good. Dunleavy, I think, gets a little bit better. JR is going to probably get back up to about 40%. And I think
the Cavs are shooting 35 threes a game.
They're just going to bomb threes. It's incredible. It's really incredible. And
that's crazy, dude. But
it's awesome. Like, I think it works.
Yeah. I think it's great. Really this works. Is how they killed teams on the playoffs. Yeah. And, like, I think you are going to see the little stretches where they go cold, just because that happens. And if LeBron's not all the way locked in, that can be a problem. But I've noticed their bench units are running a lot of the same sets that they ran with that unit that kind of stormed through the Eastern Conference. These LeBron-led bench units, I think, are here to stay. And they are killing teams.
Yeah. So this all leads to, I think, what is the more long-term valuable discussion when we look at this. I think everyone that talks about the Cavs and look at the Cavs knows that this is a team that they talk about themselves. Their season right now does not matter as much as the one that is going to happen in May and June. This is a team that expects to play in the finals, expects to play at that level. And when that happens, I think we expect LeBron to do more. We expect LeBron to be more engaged. We expect LeBron to do more LeBron things than we're seeing now. I mean, you look at the Sixers game, there were several points where you could just see LeBron just not even, like, getting in a stance. You could see LeBron settling for this shot where he was leaning back, his left foot is over the three-point line, and he's just, like, kind of in this, like, LeBron, like, just take one step back and, like, be more aware of where you're on the floor. Like, and you know he's just kind of coasting.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny, even that Celtics game, there were, like, at least eight Celtics layups where he was just right there and didn't jump because he just didn't care.
It took him like 6 minutes to like really like do something to Jaylen Brown. Like, I expected him to just come out and, you know, like maybe dunk on Jaylen Brown or something like that, but he didn't. And yeah, that was just sort of the byproduct of it.
It is really funny coming from like someone who's watched LeBron enough to know when he's just not trying.
Yeah.
And like, and I don't even hold it against him. And in a way, it almost helps the development of the team. Like, yeah. LeBron at 100%, you know, going full bore probably doesn't help grow anybody.
No,
it's like a boss who can take on a big workload, but instead gives it to one of his subordinates because that person needs to develop some skills. Yeah. Like,
well, I mean, we have 2 years of data that shows that Kevin Love's role was completely marginalized to be playing with LeBron. Like, yeah. It's a fact. But let me ask you this, Carter. When we get to May and June and we see this Cavs team, I personally think they're probably better off playing this way in May and June because it makes your offense less predictable. It's going to help you against a Warriors defense, in theory, that should be able to defend all these different styles, and it becomes a lot easier to defend when you know LeBron's going to come at you. I think especially with Love, as much as you can play him, I think he's going to have a lot of use in that series as someone who's going to be able to just score and do some different things. And it also, I think, frees up LeBron to create more chaos on defense, to be more of a distributor. I personally think that they're better off playing this way throughout the whole year. I expect LeBron to do more and score more when it matters, but I also think they're better off this way. Do you agree?
I don't know if they're really as different from last year's playoffs as you seem to be indicating they are.
I'm not saying it's like this huge black and white thing, but I'm saying like...
Yeah,
Kevin Love's role is different. Like, that to me is like the biggest thing here.
That's the big difference. I don't think Kyrie's role is as different as... I think he's just shooting more threes and it just feels a little different in that regard. But I think Kyrie mostly feels the same to me. But yeah, I mean, I think that like more Kevin Love now gives you the option to do it later, right? Like, I don't know if it's going to be fundamentally different or if it's going to be this LeBron-centric thing in the playoffs, even if that's probably still the best option because, you know what, LeBron is better than all these guys. Like, sometimes diversifying doesn't mean as much as I think we think it does. Like, that's you should have fair. LeBron be the hub. Like we just have this idea, like, oh, if they optimize Kevin Love, the Cavs will be optimized. And I don't think that's necessarily true. It might be. But really, there's a lot of evidence that suggests that marginalized Kevin Love, not fully optimized Kevin Love, leads to one of the best offenses in the league, if not the best offense in the league. So, yeah. So, but the point is, I guess I'm trying to make in a roundabout way, is that if he develop, if they spend, if they invest time into developing Kevin Love into a far more useful and diverse offensive option than a spot up shooter, that only helps, because it's just something you have in your tool bag that you didn't really have, and you could feel it that they didn't have it. In other series from in the past where it's like, oh, we're going to go to Kevin Love now. And it's like, oh, okay, you're going to do this for like two possessions. Then you're going to go back to letting LeBron play high pick and roll.
Yeah. Like, I think about, let's say, the finals matchup we expect to see. Like, you know, we all know the Warriors are going to play that really good
switch,
like switchy, crazy everything lineup with Durant and, you know, Iggy and Draymond, Curry and Klay. But you think about the moments where they're going to have to play Zaza. They're going to have to play Anderson Varejao. They're going to have to play David West. Kevin Love can score on those guys. Kevin Love can create chaos in those situations. It is not the most athletic chaos in the world, because he's going to get like 2 feet off the ground and shoot baby hooks, but he's going to create problems there, and I think that you can leverage him better if you kind of know that you can use him in that way. Like, I think that sort of matters. And I also want to see if they keep this up. If something goes wrong during the regular season, like let's say they have a rough patch, do they like revert back? Because I don't think they would, but I also know that we've already seen this. When the game is on the line, if it's close, Kyrie, if he's playing really well, has got shot. They went to Love late against the Celtics, but against the Sixers, when everything was just going to crap, LeBron asserted control and took things over.
Yeah, I do see that, but at the same time, there, I think there's something to the extent of like, the confidence that you just have when your teammates after you win a title, it's just very validating.
Yeah.
Like, and like, you just know you can win with these guys now. And I don't care what they say. I think there's I think LeBron probably always had these concerns whether he could win with these guys, because until you do, you just don't know.
It's, you know, you're 100% right.
You don't. And in that, having won a title really emboldens everyone, I think, to play more confidently, to play with more self-assuredness. And I think maybe we're seeing that with Love. Maybe they won't give up on him. I think it'd be fun if they didn't, because I think he's a really, really good player. And watching him take like that really swaggy, confident step-back jumper that didn't come with the immediate, like, oh, I missed, they're going to not give it to me again, like, anxiety. Like, confident Kevin Love is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's what we're seeing in these in the season, this young season.
Yeah, we're back to GQ confident Kevin Love, not like,
oh,
David,
hell yeah,
not reading too much David Foster Wallace, like Shaggy bad mustache Kevin Love. Like, we're back.
I love the mustache. I have no comment on the mustache.
Yeah, mustache is fine, but like the haircut where you like come off the floor. Like, I always think of that Kings game where he hit this big shot and you have Kyrie and JR doing the guitar celebration and Love just looks miserable. Like, he's walking off the floor like someone just kicked his dog. He just looks miserable.
I think that, you know, all the bad stuff I thought might happen coming off of winning a title seems to not really be bothering this team. And all the good stuff really is, it seems to be in effect. So this team's in a really good spot right now. I know it's funny watching, maybe it's just me, but like just watching, you know, certain people on Twitter be like frustrated with the Cavs for that Sixers game. And like, I just like, I've got post-title confidence. I'm like, it's fine. Like, it's all fine.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah, I'm just like, I have no anxiety about this team right now. And maybe they lose two in a row and that changes. But I really don't think it's gonna, because I just believe in what this team can do. And until I see like a fatal flaw somewhere, like, sure, maybe they should get a backup point guard. Like maybe. And maybe another defensive big, because, you know, sometimes they can be a little one-dimensional with their big man lineups. In terms of Tristan's really the only really, really above average defender. But shit, well, whatever. They're good. They're really good.
They're really, really good.
And they're not even trying. And they're still killing everyone. And they've played some good teams. They've played the Raptors. They've played the Celtics, who were missing some pieces, sure. And they're still doing fine. So it's good to be a Cavs fan right now.
Yeah, so we'll wrap it up in these two questions about the guy who's sort of at the center of this without really being at the center of this, and that's LeBron James. You know, he currently is putting up these really absurd numbers. You look at his stat line. He's playing 36 minutes a night. He's shooting 48.5% from the field, averaging 22.8 points a game. He's, you know, shooting almost close to 57% on two-point attempts. And most importantly, and most notably, he's averaging, again, the 10.7 assists, while also averaging 8.8 rebounds. The other night, he was asked if he could average a triple-double. He said, I can kind of was like, yeah, if I really wanted to, I could do that. And I kind of, I don't think, it's not something I think he has on his checklist. He said that himself, that it's not something he has on his list of things he wants to accomplish, but it's certainly something I think he knows he could do. What odds, Carter, would you give him of actually finishing the year, maybe not at a triple-double, but averaging these very, very close to triple-double-like stats?
I would imagine some regressions on the way, especially with the rebounds. It's really hard to get to double digit rebounds on this team. Like,
yeah, I love one Thompson front court. Yeah, so good. Yeah. Eats up so many boards.
Yeah. This is one of the best defensive rebounding teams in like NBA history. I think someone wrote about last year. Love and Thompson are monsters on the boards. And plus, one of my favorite running side plots to this team is the battle over uncontested defensive rebounds. These guys would punch each other in the face to get a rebound. I can't tell you how many times a board has been just getting ready to gently drop into Kevin Love's hands, and Kyrie will swoop from the baseline and just take it. It's great, but at the same time, it's really hard to get to 10 boards on this team with two other 10 rebounders. So I don't know. I would expect a little drop off, you know. The assist thing seems to be very intentional, so maybe that stays up there. But at the same time, I think he might start looking for his own offense a little bit more than he has. I think that 24, 9 and 6 will be maybe 25, 9 and 6. Is the official Rodriguez prediction that you don't care about for his line.
Are those MVP numbers?
I think you know how I feel about this. It's that a big part of MVP is narrative momentum. And it's so funny because I'm watching all these kind of, not pundits, but, you know, national writers and stuff like, oh my God, what another LeBron masterpiece. I'm like, and like really going out of the way to mention how good he's playing on like given nights. I'm like, dude, he's been doing this the last 2 years. Like, I don't think sure, he's like getting some more passes, but like, I don't think he's been fundamentally different, like other than the assist totals. But like, it's just funny because I think we're circling back on the LeBron appreciation tour. That was a big part of my thesis for why I thought he was going to win the title or win the MVP this year, was that after, you know, anointing Durant and Curry, the finals like remind us like, oh yeah, this guy's great. Let's just all appreciate him again. So I think everyone's kind of unconsciously giving him this momentum because we're like re-aware that he's the best player in the world. So yeah, I think they're MVP numbers because people want them to be MVP numbers.
That's a pretty fair take. I think I kind of want him to just keep up. I think it'd be the most interesting scenario if he keeps playing this way, because I think the passing role is definitely to me the more organic. That's my favorite.
It's also more interesting.
Yeah, well, something it's more interesting, and I think as he actually ages and becomes more of a mortal, I think the passing and the distributing is the best way to maximize his aging. Like I think he will still probably be able to just dunk on guys, not as much, but. Like him, the court vision is something that doesn't really go away. Like that's something that's not going to go away. Like
The vision is an attribute, not a skill.
Yeah.
Either have it or you don't. He's going to have it till he dies.
Yeah. LeBron James could be like 6 years old, throw him on the block if he's in like game shape, and he could probably average like 8 assists a game.
Yeah.
Like he might do nothing else well at that point when he's 60, but he might be able to average 8 assists because he's
still just got that vision.
Got that vision. But yeah, I think this is the most interesting thing. I think certainly the expanded rotation and how what we've seen of the rotation so far is also interesting, because I'm a little bit surprised it's only been 9 guys. Because LeBron's playing, you know, almost 40 minutes a night. He's playing close to that. They haven't been able to rest, and they've kind of blown some leads. Not 3-1 leads, but leads. But we're kind of seeing little things that I think are interesting. But I think this is the most impactful over the course of the year, because A, I think the other stuff works itself out. The rotation will be what it is in the playoffs. That matters more. This Mo Williams thing will probably get resolved at some point. And all the other stuff will get resolved at some point. But this is something that I think has the most reverberating effect for June. Like, I think this is kind of something that I think it's a little bit different. They're playing a little bit different. It's not seismically different. But I think it matters in a way that I think sets them up to be better than last year. Like, I'm of the opinion that I think this team could be the best of the three Cavs teams in the second LeBron era.
I think that is absolutely fair. I think that this should be the best team. I forget who I was talking to. I'm sure someone will yell at me, but they mentioned that how important it is that everyone's had a couple of years with LeBron now, because you have to adjust to LeBron James.
Yes.
The guy is super uncompromising. Like, he doesn't give a damn what you like to do. It's what you have to do to play with him. And like, now, and once you figure it out, you're golden, and he'll take care of you forever. Literally forever in James Jones' case. But like,
James Jones.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is, like, he'll take care of you, and he'll put you in a position to succeed once you know what you need to do for him. And like, everyone knows now. Like, everyone who matters on this team, I mean, who, it's just Fry, right, of guys who haven't played more than 1 year with him?
Dunleavy.
Dunleavy. Fry and Dunleavy, but Shumpert, Kyrie, JR, Richard Jefferson, Tristan Love, all these guys know exactly what to do, and that's just invaluable. And it's a fun test case for like the value of continuity, especially since these guys aren't, you know, it's not like these veterans are washed up just yet. So they're really able to, like, it's like the best of both worlds. These guys know how to win, and they know perfectly how to play with LeBron, which makes the Cavs super dangerous.
Plus, I think you hit on something important. Dunleavy and Channing Frye, because of what they do on the court, have the easiest transitions. They shoot.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They shoot, and that matters.
Like, Frye took like 2 weeks to become a killer.
Yeah, and like, he's perfect for the role. But I think that's certainly worth watching. And just the last thing is, like, Kyrie and Love came from these very different situations, and now they're here, and now we're seeing what 2 years and a title really does for that. So I think that's important too. So Carter, thanks for coming on. It's always good to have you back on the show. It's been a minute, but
sure.
Hopefully we get you on again soon.
Yep, I'll hopefully stop working every night that we could talk.
Yeah, so if you aren't already, make sure you go follow Carter on Twitter at Carter_Shade. Find me on Twitter at CWMWrites. Find the podcast on Twitter, as always, at Locked On Cavs, on Facebook at Locked On Cavs. Go leave us a rating and review on iTunes, and just support the podcast however you want. Follow us on Twitter, give us that rating and review. I'll be reading another one of the reviews next Monday, so if you leave a really dope review, you'll get a shout-out on the show, and we all like getting public shout-outs because they're kind and nice, so make sure you do that, and we'll be back tomorrow. We're going to preview the Wizards game with Mike Sykes from Bullets Forever, so stay tuned for that. This has been Chris. This has been Carter. This has been Locked On Cavs. We'll talk to you tomorrow.